January 26, 2017. This is John Williams, and you're listening to Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast we record at WGN Radio. Portions of this are broadcast on my Saturday afternoon show at 1:30 on WGN.
I'm Steve Bertrand, the host of The Business Lunch on WGN Radio.
Scott Standis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune.
I'm Eric Zorn, the highly evolved columnist from the Tribune. My columns appear Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays. If you doubt me.
By the way, I'm on a phone for mechanical reasons I can't exactly explain, but let's get rolling on this, shall we, boys?
Sure thing.
Donald Trump has called out the city of Chicago. I think because Mayor Rahm Emanuel first called out Donald Trump again this week. He said something Trump didn't like, and so then Trump on Twitter and elsewhere said that if Chicago doesn't corral the crime, he's going to call out the feds. I'm not exactly sure what that means, but Steve Bertrand, what's your reaction to all this?
Well, it wasn't even that he was responding to what Rahm Emanuel said. He was responding to the TV show he was watching, right? I mean, that's the story was he was watching.
The O'Reilly Factor on Fox, and these statistics popped up, yeah. And then they showed up in his Twitter feed a few minutes later. So
that's where.
I thought Rahm had said something specific, but it was report about crime in Chicago.
No, John, I think there was an Emanuel clip in the package on the show. So he was like watching the O'Reilly Factor, and that's driving policy now.
But this is the reason that he tweeted about flag burning, was he saw something on Fox about protesters burning a flag, and that's how that whole issue got thrust into the news stream. This guy watches a lot of...
Do we know what calling out the feds means? Do we know what he would do if he did something to help Chicago?
Well, the obvious thing is to call in the National Guard. I mean, that's generally what you mean when you call in the feds, right?
Is that a state thing or a fed thing, though? We were
arguing
that.
Well, the governor has to call them out, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. I guess you'd have to federalize the National Guard.
Right.
But I mean, you couldn't call in the U.S. military. That's completely against the Constitution. I mean, that was the way I took it.
We all did, I think. But I think Emanuel took it and twisted it in his favor. He said, sure, bring in the help. Let's go. You want more ATF, more DEA people coming in to help? We'd welcome that help.
Well, there was a really, really fine op-ed piece in this morning's Tribune.
Did you write it?
I didn't write it. I do write most of the fine ones, but this is from George W. Knox. He's the director of the National Gang Crime Research Center, and he says, yeah, send the feds into Chicago, sure, and then he lists all this federal aid that should go to Chicago for job training, for after-school programs, for education, for rebuilding neighborhoods and so on. It's like, yeah, we could use federal aid, and I think the mayor said something similar to that. It was like, if you're talking about sending federal dollars here to help us fight crime, absolutely, but that's not what Trump talks about when he talks about fighting crime. If anyone saw that interview last night on ABC, where he basically says, you know, it's easy. This is a simple problem. You just got to get tough. That's basically his idea on fighting crime. And who knows what that means, but I don't think it's going to appeal to at least the people who wrote that Justice Department report.
Yeah, that's still campaign rhetoric. And now that you actually have to put it into action, I'm mystified as to what exactly that means, like literally armed National Guardsmen on streets. And does get tough mean you chase kids down and put them in jail? I don't know what that means. Listen, Eric, if we had more maybe officers on the streets, that might help. Maybe we could dispatch officers to other areas because the National Guard helped. I mean, I want to not dismiss it out of hand, but I'm not exactly sure how you get tough.
Well, but let's look at the other side of this equation. We're still looking at, now it's January in Chicago, and the shootings haven't slowed down. In fact, they're at a faster rate than it started in January of 2016. It may be because there's better weather. But, I mean, there is a problem here, and it's systemic. It is part the police force standing down. It is part of stopping, stop and frisk. It is part of a judiciary that won't send people to jail under the existing laws. So there's a deep, list of reasons why this is happening. So the natural reaction, I think, if you're a Trump type person, is to look at this and say, well, let's send in the troops. I don't think.
Well, go ahead, Aaron.
No. I mean, I don't want to discount this. And I feel like it's kind of easy for those of us who live in safe neighborhoods and work in a safe building to say, don't soil our streets with army men with guns. I think you need to go, you know, if you ask people who live in those communities, who live on those streets, who can't send their children outside, and when their kids are on the porch, they're afraid they're going to get shot, might have a very different view of that and are really looking for whatever they can possibly do to make those neighborhoods safer. And they can't wait around for years for jobs programs and after-school programs to mm-hmm. clean it up. So, I mean, I think that you'd have to be careful when you talk about something like this not to sound too obtuse.
Well, my thing is, and I keep going back to it, I don't think the president's words matter that much to him. And, you know, you can go back to that ABC interview where he said again that he's convinced and had been told that waterboarding or torture works. You know, during the campaign, he said that General Mattis told him it didn't work and he was convinced it didn't. So he said something different there than he did yesterday. I don't think he puts weight into his words. So I think it's easy for him to say, I'm going to send the feds in. The rest of us try to figure out what that means. And he doesn't really, that's not a priority for him to figure out what it means.
It's not the first time he said it. It's not the first time he said it that way. So that's another thing to bear in mind. But he does, you're right. He never qualifies what the feds mean.
Well, if I could quote him exactly on the interview last night, he said, the problem of violence in Chicago is very easily fixable. We need to smarten up and toughen up. Now that it's not very specific, but it's also kind of ominous in a way, because I think when you're talking about toughening up, you're talking about getting rid of some of the, you know, civil liberties, the norms that
violate the
control police work. So it remains
to be the embarrassment of it all. I mean, literally, I think mayors and cities don't like the specter of the National Guard being called out to your city, but was it Steve or Eric's point? If it made my neighborhood or your neighborhood safer so you could send your kids safely off to school, maybe you wouldn't mind that so much, right?
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think that, I mean, and the Tribune editorial this morning said to that some of these words to that effect, which was saying that, you know, this is a problem and that we can't sit around and say, well, this is a silly idea. We have used federal troops for protecting citizens at times in our history, and this might be such a time. The optics of it would be horrible for the mayor, maybe for the governor as well. It's like to have, you know, armed and also, you know, National Guard troops are not trained to be policemen.
Would it work? I mean, why do you think that would slow down someone shooting someone in an apartment
well,
on a corner?
You'd have to, it would have to be attached to a number of things. You'd have to have the army, military presence on every corner, and there would have to be a curfew.
It would work. It would work where the troops were. You could put a bunch of them,
sure,
and then it would move to the next street.
Well,
the
that's
next
my
block.
Point. I think maybe
it's. I don't think anyone thinks that's.
He's got a good point. I mean, if we have this idea of there's bullets ringing back and forth across streets, and if we had soldiers there, then they'd shoot back or they wouldn't shoot at all. The soldiers would shoot back or nobody would shoot because, oh, my God, there's a National Guardsman. But if, in fact, the firing happens in the apartment upstairs or in the bar, unless there's a cop there right now to stop that. It's funny, Steve. That's a good question. How does that fix it?
A lot of it seems to be happening just on the street. I mean, a lot of these things are revenge shootings. It seems like there's this cycle that's going on where someone will shoot up somebody, and then there'll be a memorial gathering, and someone will come and shoot that up, and so they'll go and they'll shoot the people who are at the next memorial gathering, and so there are places where this is happening. But again, you know, this is not a policing strategy. Putting people out there with guns in their hands, standing on certain corners, isn't going to get that job done. You are going to have to, I mean, maybe when you're talking about federal dollars, maybe you get a lot more money for more police in Chicago, for, you know, more cameras, more job programs. I mean, there are all kinds of things where you can use this money to start attacking the problem, but that's not what, I don't think that's what he's talking about.
Yeah, can you imagine Donald Trump saying, here's what we need to do. We need to have more jobs programs. We need to activate the community. We need to, you know, if he went with some soft tactics that in the long run might actually fix the problem, that's the way a mayor talks. But it would sure be odd to hear those words coming out of tough Donald's mouth, wouldn't it?
Well, it's like the wall, right? I mean, he likes these big grand gestures, and he's not, you know, talking about exactly ways to solve whatever problems are being caused by immigration. I mean, right now we have some of the lowest rates of people coming from Mexico to the United States.
In 40 years, I think.
And he wants to invest billions and billions of dollars in this, you know, however tall the wall is supposed to be along the border to stop a problem that basically has been slowed to a trickle by conventional
means. But if I can argue against myself, those words did matter. I mean, you know, that's something that he said he was going to do, and damn it, he did it, along with a number of other things this week. The pipelines.
Well, he didn't actually do it.
Well, you're right.
Mean, he...
But the Republicans in Philadelphia seem to say, you know, right, we're going to fund this. The president of Mexico is staying in Mexico City because he's not going to fund it.
We do not want to start a war, a trade war, any kind of war with Mexico. I mean, it's just, they are an important ally.
Well,
in
we won
region.
Last one. I don't see why not.
He's got a lime in his Corona over there. That's the problem.
But, you know, I mean, I just think, I and this, of course, the idea that Mexico is going to pay for it. How is this supposed to happen exactly?
Well, didn't they? I don't know, because weren't they floating this idea that, well, we'll just give Mexico less in aid and say that's what we'll pay for it?
Right.
But McConnell, McConnell and Speaker Ryan talked just a not short time ago about how they thought it would cost maybe $12 billion and that the Congress would appropriate the money.
Well, and let's also bear in mind, you build the thing, then you have to actually have personnel monitoring it. And that's a continually a funding billions of dollars a year to just, you know, monitor the thing. It's a ridiculous
idea. By
the
way, I think that's an interesting point, Scott. And also, if they say $12 billion, what do you think the real cost will end up being? When's the last time
90.
The federal government said it's going to cost X and it didn't cost 10X?
I thought the Republican Party was the one that was supposed to be against government waste more than anybody else. They were the ones who were against government boondoggles.
I mean, when the deficits balloon, what administrations do they balloon under?
Well, military spending, of course, is another issue where they spend a lot of money on things.
He's going to double. Trump has already said he's going to double the size of the. That was lovely. Double the size of the.
Okay, it was mine.
Double the size of the Navy. Well, that's multi tens or hundreds of billions of dollars there, and we're fighting a foe in the short term that does not have a Navy. By the way, ISIS does not have a Navy.
Not yet, Scott.
Well, those are different kinds of battles. I think Donald Trump also has the luxury of being able to say some things, singular statements like we're going to build a wall or I'm going to reinstitute torture, knowing that, in fact, he doesn't have to do it. It doesn't have to happen. For instance, he can say, well, I'm tough. I want torture reinstated, but okay, it's illegal now. And there's a debate about whether or not it's effective. So I'll defer to my cabinet on this. But I want us to waterboard. And that's the kind of rhetoric that he can almost safely say now because, in fact, he can't do it. You know what I mean? He has the protection of it being illegal, so he can maintain his tough stance without actually having to follow through.
That's fine, but he's going to have a much harder time when it comes to changing health care, for instance, how he's going to square his rhetoric on health care. Insurance for all. Everyone's going to get covered. We're going to have much better plans at much lower prices. He's going to have a much harder time squaring that rhetoric with reality than he is talking about, well, I'd love to torture these guys, but Mad Dog Mattis says we can't do it.
Well, to quote Steve Bertrand, elections have consequences.
Oh, my goodness.
In fact, he should follow through on trying to change health care, and he should follow through on trying to build a wall to between us and Mexico. Literally, that's why he got elected, or at least it's one of the big reasons. Building the wall was the number one point on his 10-point list of ways he was going to make America great again. So it would be, you know, doubly, you know, not only would it be a disservice maybe to people who didn't vote for him, that is, we don't want to build a wall, but it would be a disservice to the people who did vote for him because they do want him to build a wall. He has to follow through on that pledge or at least try. That's why he got elected.
I think he has to at least faint at following through, which is what he did this week. I mean, he sort of sent out, I forget exactly what the order said, but it does not actually appropriate any money.
He can't do that.
But he sort of, you know, let's look into this, let's get this ball rolling. But I think he's going to run into some reality, and I hope that the Republicans in Congress are going to be the ones who are finally going to, you know, someone's going to have to rein him in.
They're talking about spending the money. I mean, I think this is going to happen. Well,
I think, Steve, they'll be able to use an accounting trick and actually claim that Mexico paid for
right.
it, either less in aid or some sort of tariff, or will take money from accounts that are here or Mexican Americans that are sending money back to Mexico somehow will capture that and apply it. At some point, they're going to say, see, we paid for it from Mexico, but it won't be them writing a check.
Well, you know, I alluded to earlier, and I think we should discuss the fact that the president of Mexico canceled his trip to the United States for next week. Earlier today, Donald Trump said, well, if he doesn't want to pay for the wall, maybe he shouldn't come. And Peña Nieto then issued a tweet saying, we told the White House that we're not going to come.
Do we want, I mean, honestly, do we want a trade war with Mexico? Do we want to have this important ally in our hemisphere turn against us? I mean, because they could ally themselves with Russia, with China. I mean, this is not, it's not as easy as just saying you're going to pay for this wall that we don't need because we have to satisfy these people who think that we need a wall when we don't. I mean, that is crazy. And at some point, some adult in some room is going to have to say, let's just say we built a metaphorical wall. Look how low immigration is. We've solved this problem. And we're moving on to the next thing, and let the people out there who voted for Trump and feel disappointed, let them be disappointed. There were a lot of Democrats who were really disappointed that President Obama couldn't close Guantanamo, right? And did they turn against
the, though, Eric? What? Don't you think, Eric, you forget who the big dog in this conversation is? The United States doesn't have to care if the president of Mexico doesn't want to pay a visit to Washington. And we don't have to care if they don't like our trade policies. We're the United States. We get to dictate our own terms. And I'm kind of surprised that there isn't more talk along those lines. We don't have to buckle to the unfairness of or the wishes of the Mexican government.
I'm looking at it.
If we feel like we're getting screwed here, we have an obligation to fix it.
But we're not. But the thing is, I don't think we are getting screwed here. That's the bottom line. Is I think that this will be a bad deal for the U.S. if we end up. If we end up building this, spending billions of dollars to build this wall, and end up in some sort of a trade war where goods coming from Mexico are much more expensive than they are now, and where we're not getting the kind of cooperation that we expect in our hemisphere from this important country. I mean, I think that if you're looking at it from what is in America's best interest, I don't think this is in America's best interest.
What's the worst of it, Eric? That Chevys are more expensive or Fords are more expensive? Is that the worst of it?
Things could get, well, with all these trade things that he's talking about, yeah, a lot of things could get a lot more expensive.
Yeah.
And if people would, I think this is a decision that people are either intelligently or foolishly making. They say, okay, you know what? All those inexpensive goods from China and Mexico at Walmart or on the car dealer lots, I'd rather pay more for them and feel that I was treated fairly and that those were made in America than pay less for them because of the trade situation.
When do consumers make that kind of choice? You could buy American-made stuff now and it's much more expensive. You want to buy American-made shoes, they cost more. You buy American-made clothes, I think, somewhere, they cost more. And you could not shop at Walmart and shop at your downtown stores, and it costs more. But people don't do that. They go and they shop at Walmart, they shop at Amazon, they look for the lowest price, and they're going to be angry if the prices go way up and the jobs don't come back to fill those.
Well, I think even more to a humanitarian point, my wife had a great line this morning because she was talking about the trade war stuff, and she said, well, there go the dollar stores. And we can laugh, but honest to goodness, tribute to Janine Fadich. But if you think about that, that's where poor people shop, and that's where they get stuff that's inexpensive. Trump is talking about getting rid of that,
And I also think the equation is false, right? I mean, if the barriers go up, more of us aren't going to be working. Those of us, the manufacturing people, have lost their jobs to automation. Certainly some to Mexico and China, but mostly to automation.
Right.
So what's going to happen is we're going to pay more, and they're not going to be necessarily working anymore.
There was one other point about that I was going to make, and it suddenly slipped my mind.
Well, my thing is, what we haven't addressed, and I keep going back to it, is that you're right. The U.S. is the giant, Mexico is the lapdog. But guess what? The lapdog is the first guy who stood up to this new president. You know, I mean, not the Republicans in Congress, certainly not the Democrats in Congress. It's the president of little old hapless Mexico who said, fine, I'm not coming. Well, I'm not going to be played by you again like I was played by you in the campaign.
Speaking of turtles at the bottom of the stack, to make a Dr. Seuss analogy here, one of the things that's fascinated me this week is how government employees, bureaucrats, low down in the chain at some of these government agencies, have been squashed by the Trump administration have started rogue Twitter accounts. So you have, instead of having the official Badlands National Park Twitter account, you'll have an alt Badlands or whatever. There's a series of them, alt FDA.
Right.
And these are government agencies, government bureaucrats who are tweeting using social media, the same tool that Donald Trump used to rise up and become president. They're using to undermine his presidency. They're using that to get information out to people that the administration does not want to get out. News organizations are putting out ways to contact them anonymously, ways to leak to them, and this administration so far seems to be leaking like a sieve. And there's some irony in there, some sweet payback.
What is it? This weekend, the Republican leadership is meeting in
Philadelphia.
I mean, talk about the leadership on both sides of the aisle in the House and the Senate. I mean, these are profiles in pudding. This has got to be the weakest.
Right. Well, that's why.
And so who's going to stand up against this guy and say, no, that this is nuts, that we can't do this? Some of the policies they probably agree with. I know many they won't. And so
I mean, you had a little bit of it with McCain talking about torture and waterboarding.
McCain's not in a leadership position, though. He's not. He's not this. You know, he's not the leader of the Republican. I don't even know if he chairs a committee. But regardless,
he's a big voice. People hear John McCain talk, and
but he's an impotent voice. If you think about it, what has he? I mean, does he have a block of votes that will follow him or follow his position? I just don't see anything like that forming.
Well, he caved on Tillerson, and so did Rubio.
Oh, Rubio, I love
that.
Oh, God, Rubio's the best.
Cave.
Yeah, they both.
Hey, I just remembered that thing that I forgot. Can I insert it here?
Sure.
Well, I think it's germane. Do you fellas think that the midterm election is going to be pretty interesting? The Republicans are all sitting there and sort of fecklessly or smugly following Donald Trump's lead. In 2 years, if this stuff has the sort of repercussions that some of us fear, there's going to be hell to pay in 2 years. I think that'll be very interesting what happens at the midterm.
It all depends on if they can get rid of the millions of illegal voters.
Yes, those 3 to 70 million voters,
some of whom are apparently in the president's cabinet.
The Senate map is not
true.
The Senate map is not favorable to the Democrats. Apparently, they're defending far more seats than they were this past time. But I mean, midterm elections are historically bad, traditionally bad for the party in power.
The question, though, is how much people identify Donald Trump as a Republican, right? I mean, there could be that.
I think he's done that.
If the Republican Congress does his bidding, then I think there might be some pushback. You think about that rally, the rallies across the world that took place last weekend. If any of that is still around, plus the whatever results of some of these policies might be, it'd be interesting. Listen, 2 years. I was about to say 2 years can't come soon enough. I don't want 2 years to come any quicker than 24 months because I want this administration to be successful. We got to live with it. Hopefully some of these things will work. We're reexamining age-old policies and philosophies, and maybe some of the things they're going to do will be better for us. So that'll be swell. But if it's not, well, in 2 years, who knows what'll happen then?
Well, I think that's right. You know, you can't – we've taken this wait-and-see attitude about Trump's personality, and I think that we have realized that he is not going to change, that he is a 70-year-old man-child. Very impulsive, arrogant, narcissistic. That all is not going to change. The effects of his policies and what he's able to get done and how he does them, the jury is still out on a lot of that. I mean, nothing has really happened yet. A lot of ground pawing and signatures and harumphing and so it has happened, but we haven't seen any real world effects yet, I don't believe, have we?
Well, I mean, I think the pipeline things have happened, and that certainly signals a change in course, right? That has happened.
Crossed 20.
Businesses loving this because they're going to get rid of
regulations. Shortest period of time between 1,000 points in the Dow was the period of time between 19,000 and 20,000.
Wow.
Yeah. No, I can tell you, and this is personal, but my youngest and his wife were looking to buy a house, and now they're kind of can't because Trump signed the got rid of the FHA. Was there an FHA ruling?
The mortgage guarantee.
The mortgage guarantee, and so that cost them a lot more, and they just priced them out of a house. So from a personal standpoint, and they called me last night saying, what country are we moving to?
Yeah,
we voted Australia.
It's an interesting decision. My understanding is they did that because, A, they could. It was one of the things that almost literally with the signature, they could affect immediate change. Some of these things he's signing and then holding up like a proud eighth grader at the science fair. But some of these things that he's signing take a while to actually have some effect. But that one actually would happen right now.
The Keystone. And also yeah, go ahead.
And I'll just finish this, Eric. And the funds that those monies would be subsidizing or helping people with their loans, that balance is low. And so maybe it either needs to be built up or we need to be a little less generous with it. That was maybe the thought behind some of that. Go ahead, Eric.
Well, the Keystone Pipeline has always been a symbolic issue on both sides. I think, I mean, the environmental impact of one more pipeline of thousands that are crisscrossing this country is not necessarily huge, nor is the economic impact. It's like they're talking about 35 full-time jobs, permanent jobs out of the Keystone Pipeline. It's always been much more of a symbolic battle, and the Obama administration had won that symbolic battle, and now they're going to lose that symbolic battle, and the Trump administration is going to win it, but I don't think there's going to be that much in the way of real-world consequences.
Thousands and thousands of jobs made with a pipeline of U.S. steel. That's what's going to happen.
35 permanent jobs.
No, I don't disagree with you, but that's the way it was sold.
Okay. Well, fine. I mean, what I'm saying is
that, no, I'm with you. I'm with you, Eric.
Okay, but all I'm saying is that I mean, John. I mean, I'm sort of agreeing with John, which is that we do need to see. You know, we can't judge the impact of what Trump's administration is going to do in the first week. We can, of course, be quite alarmed at a lot of things that we've seen and more apprehensive than we were before because he has not made that pivot to be presidential, to be more welcome. He's become more pugnacious. And so there are a lot of bad signs out there. But you know, John's right. I mean, we should not say that everything he's going to do is going to be disastrous. And there may be some things that will turn around some numbers. A week ago, I published a column which basically I laid down a bunch of markers. Said this is where the Dow is. This is where unemployment is. This is where gas prices are. This is where, you know, all these various measures we have of our health and happiness. This is where the consumer confidence index is. Where are those numbers going to go? And if he moves all those numbers in the right direction or many of them in the right direction, then you say, well, okay, maybe on balance things are better off here.
What's your attitude about the search for the illegal aliens and illegal voters and the massive, the huge investigation we're going to have into this?
Another waste of money.
Well, and I'm gobsmacked. I mean, he's talking about people who are registered to vote in two states. And that includes his Treasury Secretary nominee and his top advisor,
which is not
Steve
illegal.
Bannon.
I'm registered.
No, of course
to vote
not.
In two states.
I was going to ask you if you were. You probably are. A lot
I
of
am.
People are.
You just don't.
You don't vote in
who,
two states.
Who rescinds their voter right registration when they move? They just out register somewhere else.
You
I
just
mean,
don't do
I'm
it.
I'm sure all my kids, or at least two of my kids, are registered.
And that's the Pew study that the president keeps referring to. It was a study looking at how the voter rolls needed to be cleaned up by the bureaucrats who do that. That people move. People die, and sometimes there are as many as a few million who are sort of out of date. It doesn't mean those few million are voting twice or illegals.
Yeah, despite all the jokes about dead people voting in Chicago, you just don't find that. You don't find any prosecutions or instances of that happening in any number whatsoever. People die, and they don't. You know, they're still on the rolls because canvassers don't catch them for a while.
But also, to be devil's advocate here, I mean, I would welcome this investigation only because it's always been for a number of years.
But no one believes it's true.
I mean,
know, you've
got 50 secretaries of state. Wouldn't it be nice if we had facts that actually said?
I think we do. We've got 50 secretaries of state, the people whose job it is to clean up and keep track of the voter fraud and voter rolls, and they say it doesn't exist. And that's to me, that you've got the spokesman for the...
Yeah, but we know what they're coming from.
You've got the spokesman for the president.
Scott, why do you care? What's your worry?
Well, you don't want voter fraud, clearly. You want clean and legitimate elections. And this, if you had this investigation, it just showed what we all believe it will show. And then that put, for the most part,
so
it puts it to rest.
What do you think the president's motivation is behind this, Mr. Stannis?
Oh, well, he wants to just, you know, you want to hear my crazy-ass theory is that I think he wants to get rid of elections. But that, you know, I think that's, I'm not kidding. I am not kidding.
But, Scott, we don't want Martians either, but we don't need an investigation to know that they don't exist. That's kind of the thing. And for me, it's the most telling is that you've got the president's spokesman saying, not even that there's might be something to it, only saying, well, it's a long-held belief by the president.
That was very funny, wasn't it?
Yeah, he's basically saying, well, we all know it's outrageous, but hey, the guy thinks it's true.
Yes, the president believes this. He believes this for a long time. It's like, he believes it, but do you believe it? Well, I'm not in a position to say. No, I mean, it's... I don't think that's actually going to go anywhere. They'll probably hold a few hearings on Capitol Hill to placate him. I mean, what he wants, I think the question is, what does Trump want out of this? He wants people to think that he won the popular vote, and he would have won the popular vote. And there's a substantial percentage, not an overwhelming number, of Trump voters who think that he did, but that this happened.
He's a conspiracy theorist, and this is his first while president conspiracy theory. I mean, he was a conspiracy theorist with Obama.
The White House. Right. That's the terrifying thing. I mean, you know, how big was the crowd on the mall? Were there 3 million illegal voters in California, places like that? That's silly talk. It doesn't matter. Those conversations aren't consequential. But when the White House lies about the trivial, it terrifies a lot of us to imagine what they'll be telling us when it's important.
Because these are numbers that are verifiable. This number of people on the mall thing, everyone thinks, well, what a silly little controversy. Well, if they are willing to look at numbers that are as obvious as the numbers were in the crowd of the inauguration and lie about it. I mean, they lied about those numbers. Trump lied about it. Sean Spicer came out and lied about it. What are they going to do with numbers that we can't see as well? What are they going to do? I mean, the unemployment rate, all these other, the GDP, all these numbers that could be manipulated and so on. If they're going to just deny all those numbers or try to change them, and we can't, it's hard. When someone says the GDP grew at 3.5% in the third quarter of 2016, and he says, no, it didn't.
Right.
It grew at 5.6%. It's not quite as easy to say, well, here are the pictures. And
that's why the millions of illegal voters is important, because that's what people need to remember. Next time he says something that seems to be outrageous or a little unbelievable, remember that he's a guy who believes that. And you just got to put
that.
Give
me one last answer to this question, Steve. The New York Times in a headline used the word lie.
Yeah.
If the administration puts forward something that's not true, is it appropriate to call those lies?
I don't like. I'm uncomfortable with that. I'd rather.
Why?
Well, I have a baby answer. I mean, I'd rather use a different word that means the same thing, which is sort of cowardice.
Prevarication.
Yeah, or you know, unproven or unfounded. You know, the unfounded claims. I don't know. A lie implies intent, and you know, this guy just might have a goofy conspiracy belief. That doesn't mean he's intentionally lying. I just don't like the word.
I saw a printed rumination on this, and they talked about Trump's assertion that he saw a bunch of Muslims celebrating on rooftops after 9/11. And they were saying, well, that is clearly a lie. And I was thinking, well, that might not be a lie, because he might actually believe that, because I don't think his grasp of reality is as strong as we would hope
it would
be.
It's alternative truth. It's different.
And so... I guess I don't want to edge away from the word lie, because something that is said with utter disregard for whether it's true or not, to me, qualifies as a lie. I think in what Steve, I hear you saying is you've got to know
in the intent of them. Yeah.
You've got to know that it's false, rather than just saying I don't care if it's true, I'm just going to say this anyway. And I think that if we start, I think we need to call that a lie. And maybe folks at Merriam-Webster will take an issue with me on that, but that, it seems to me like we need to use strong language to condemn that kind of rhetorical behavior.
I'm more with Steve Bertrand on this one, but you can't help but notice the New York Times and CNN being much more aggressive about their headlines.
It started, John, I think it started when at the Birther news conference, when he claimed to have ended it, put it to rest. Hillary Clinton started it, I'm putting it to rest. That was the day that the Washington Post and New York Times sort of called him out on a mistruth or lie in their headlines, as I recall.
Let's wrap this thing up, boys, by sharing with our listeners something that we are reading, watching, listening to, or consuming. What's the recommendation this week?
Can I go first here, John Williams?
Really loving?
I got to fly here, but I want to offer a counter check to a previous recommendation.
Okay.
Do you know what it might be?
No. Yes, this Netflix series you recommended last week?
No, I would never contradict myself. It's John's pick from last week, The Young Pope.
Oh.
We were texting about it last night, I think, and The Young Pope, I've watched the first four or five episodes. John, are you still recommending it?
No.
Yeah.
No, you're right. The first one was so awesome.
It was incredible.
The second one sort of made, did you have the same sort of feeling about it I did, Steve?
Yeah, I did. I love some of the characters of it, and it was intriguing, but by episode, I think we're at 4 or 5 now, it's like, I'll get on with it.
Yeah.
I'm contradicting you, John, because I've got nothing else to say today. I'm sorry.
Steve is unrecommending the young.
Yeah, right.
Okay, fair enough. Goodbye, Steve.
Bye, John.
How about you, Eric Zorn? What's your recommendation this week?
I am recommending the Axios newsletter. Axios is a brand new web publication based in Washington. Jim VandeHei, Mike Allen from Politico started it. Mm-hmm. And they have a daily briefing. It's like a 10-point insider look at Washington. Very easy to read. The motto of one of the mission statements for the Axios website is they're looking for smart brevity, which I think is something that we can all use in our news coverage. It's axios.com, and you can subscribe to their free newsletter. And it's one of the first things I read every morning after the Chicago Tribune and Scott Stanis's cartoons.
Of course.
How about you, Scott? What do you like?
I've got three quick things. First off, Hidden Figures, the film about three African-American women, mathematicians. It makes heroes of mathematicians, which I think is marvelous, and every kid should go see it. And the second thing is there's a great webpage I just stumbled on just before I came up here called, have you seen this, According to Trump? Because he, you know, when he gives a speech, he flails with his hands, and so they've inserted
an accordion. Accordion Trump is what you're saying.
Is that it?
I think it's accordion, right?
Is it accordion or accordion too? I thought it was. Anyway, they put an accordion in his hands, and it's actually very funny.
It's great, I've seen that.
Wow.
And the last thing I did last night, obviously the passing of American icon Mary Tyler Moore. Is we watched like an hour and a half of or more of Mary Tyler Moore shows, and then we watched some Dick Van Dyke, and you forget how incredibly subversive her performance, particularly in the Mary Tyler Moore show, was. That this is a woman, they had some romantic elements between her coworkers, but for the most part, these were buddies.
What is that? What does that stream? What service?
I just went on YouTube.
YouTube.
And so, yeah, just, and she was a remarkable person and really changed and defined the culture. First, as her performance on in the Dick Van Dyke show as a modern American woman and housewife, mother and wife, but then in the Mary Tyler Moore show, it was truly transcendent. I had not realized it until we watched it again last night.
I've got to do that. That sounds like fun. What about you, Johnny?
Well, by the way, the day Mary Tyler Moore passed away yesterday, I went over to the Mary Tyler Moore statue, which is proudly displayed in Minneapolis and shows the screen grab, if you will, the freeze frame from where she throws the hat in the air. So there's Mary Tyler Moore frozen in time, throwing her hat in the air the way she did at the open of the Mary Tyler Moore show. And that's a bit of an icon in Minneapolis, and especially so now. And so people are going there, leaving flowers, reflecting, and I posted a video of me talking to some of the people in that area and then doing my own homage to Mary Tyler Moore, and that's on my Facebook page. I'm King John on Facebook. This weekend, last weekend, Brenda and I just had to get away from the world, so we said, let's go to a movie, and we saw Dev Patel and Nicole Kidman and others in The Lion. I don't know if you guys have seen that
movie.
Oh, yeah,
what'd you think?
I thought it was great. I just thought it was so good. Dev Patel's the big star. He's the kid from Slumdog Millionaire, but this really isn't his movie. It's the movie of a much younger actor, the young man who plays him as a child, a 4-year-old boy named Sonny something.
Oh, one of the most adorable children ever.
Ever. it's that kid, and he wasn't nominated, but I'm telling you, that kid steals the movie, and in a very good way. The Lion is a swell flick, so I'm recommending that this week, too. And that's this week's Mincing Rascals podcast. Scott Stantis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
As always, Eric Zorn. Steve Bertrand exited stage left. This is John Williams, portions of which are broadcast on my Saturday show at 1:30 on WGN Radio. Thank you very much to our producer. That's Kristen Decker. And I'll bet you that's Benji over there, our studio engineer. Thank you very much, Ben Cortez. And we'll drop another podcast on you next week.
You little rascal, you! You little rascal, you! You little rascal, you!